Hi there, this is Tim Lightfoot from the Huffines Institute. I want to take just a minute before we get to the podcast to tell you about a really cool event that we're having here. On March the 23rd, 2012, we're having Huffines Discussion 2012, and what we're calling HD2. If you remember from last year, if you've been with us that long, we had the Huffines Discussion 1 last year where we brought in 8 scholars in sports medicine, people that had big visions and big thinkers in sports medicine, and we gave them 18 minutes to tell us their big ideas and what they thought was coming. It was a great interaction that day. These talks are all at the lay level, so anyone can understand them and be with it. And so today, we're inviting you to come on March the 23rd to the Huffines Discussion 2012, 1 to 4 p.m. If you want more details, you can go to huffinesinstitute.org. Check us out. Check out the speakers we've lined up. They're just an incredible set of speakers, and you wouldn't want to miss that. In the meantime, here's the podcast.
Welcome to the Sports Medicine Podcast, brought to you by the Sidney and J.L. Huffines Institute for Sports Medicine and Human Performance in the Department of Health and Kinesiology at Texas A&M University. At the Huffines Institute, we're always working to facilitate, apply, and bring you the most up-to-date coverage of the wide world that is sports medicine and human performance, all in a language you can understand and share with your friends. And now, here's our host, the director of the Huffines Institute, Dr. Tim Lightfoot.
Well, hello, and welcome to the weekly podcast from the Huffines Institute for Sports Medicine and Human Performance. I'm your host, Tim Lightfoot, and I'm so glad that you took the time to download us and that you're joining us today. I'm really excited because, as we do every week, we are bringing you experts from the field of sports medicine and exercise science, and today, of course, is no exception. Today we have with us Dr. Dave Bassett. Dr. Bassett is a professor in the Kinesiology, Recreation, and Sports Studies Department at the University of Tennessee in Knoxville, and he's the co-director of the Obesity Research Center there. Dr. Bassett got his PhD at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, and I'd like to, and he and I have been friends for a long time, and I'd like to say welcome to the podcast today, Dave.
Thanks, Tim. Good morning.
Good morning. I asked Dave to be on the podcast today because he has done some fascinating work over the past many years looking at how to measure physical activity in humans. So, Dave, tell us about that, and why is that even important? Aren't we all just physically active?
Well, some of us are more active than others. We have been in particular interested in devices that can measure how much movement you undertake and sort of convert that to other units such as calorie expenditure. It's always interesting to get an objective recording of what people do in their everyday lives, and sometimes it doesn't always match up with what they will tell you on subjective, you know, paper and pencil questionnaires.
Yeah. Do people think they do more than they actually do?
I think that's, yeah, in general, that's probably true.
Yeah. So we always think that we do a lot more than we actually do.
Yeah.
Well, I guess that's normal. I went out and ran 5 miles today. Not really. But, so what have you found out about these devices? And then we'll talk about how you've been using these actually to move science along. What have you found out about these devices? Are there any that actually work well?
Yeah, well, the simplest type is simply a pedometer that responds to up and down movements of the trunk when walking or running. And we've tested out, you know, dozens of different types of pedometers. We have found that some are a lot more accurate than others. And so that's kind of a measure that scientists are getting interested in now, is how many steps a person takes per day.
Okay. Now, which one? We'll do the consumer portion here of the podcast.
Okay.
If you were going to recommend a pedometer or accelerometer for someone, which one would you recommend? Price points and so forth.
Yeah. Well, there's one called the Yamax DigiWalker.
Okay.
It has a spring-levered device, and it does a pretty good job of counting steps in normal weight individuals. For people who are overweight or obese, we would recommend a pedometer that has a different mechanism inside. It's called a piezoelectric accelerometer, and basically that one is just going to do a better job of counting steps when it gets tilted, like if your belt isn't straight up and down vertical. the piezoelectric devices do a better job.
Mm, okay. And now, what's the price points on these? Do these cost hundreds of dollars, or can you buy one for $5? Or
The spring-levered ones are generally about $20, and then the piezoelectric accelerometer pedometers are in the range of about $60 to $70.
Okay. And I think you've told me in the past you cannot buy a good pedometer for less than $20.
That's correct. Yeah, there's a lot of promotional pedometers that cost a dollar or two, and they're used for, you know, health fairs, and sometimes they give them away in cereal boxes. I think McDonald's had one called the Stepometer, and those generally don't work at all.
Okay, so stay away from the really cheap ones. Buy
right.
a little bit better one and get accurate measures anyway. Right?
Yeah.
Right.
Now, there's another type of device called an accelerometer, which is often used in research, and those contain a computer chip and more memory, and they can actually store minute by minute or even second by second how much activity a person does over a period of weeks. So those are a lot more sophisticated devices. They usually don't have a digital display of the steps. They're simply used to monitor movement, and they can do a better job of telling us what intensity a person is exercising at.
But that's not normally something that the consumer would use. That's normally a kind of a research monitoring tool, right?
Right. And these are more expensive. They run about $300 to $400 a piece.
Okay. So there's some choices. There's certainly some good devices out there. And one of the things we'll put into the show notes is a link to one of Dr. Bassett's recent publications. I think that supplement just came out last month, didn't it, in Medicine and Science and Sports
yeah.
and Exercise, where they wrote a scientific paper about all of this stuff, and we would certainly point people towards that. But Dr. Bassett is certainly the world expert on pedometers. So tell us, your career has been more than just deciding which device works best. You've been actually using these tools to look at activity. You mentioned a while ago that pedometers will help you figure out how many steps a day you're taking. Let's launch from there. How many steps a day should people be taking, and how do we know that?
Well, that's an interesting question. I mean, if we talk about first about how many steps per day are people taking, we have done a study that indicates that the average U.S. adult takes about 5,100 steps per day.
Okay.
There's a feeling out there that that's too low. People should be doing more activity. And the Japanese have put out a number of 10,000 steps per day. This has been around since about 1972. Mm. But that 10,000 steps per day is often seen as some sort of a benchmark or an indicator of somebody who is pretty physically active.
Okay. All right. So if we do 10,000 steps a day, we're fairly active, but in most cases, people do about 5,000 steps a day.
Correct,
yeah. So, but is it safe to say we want people to shoot for 10,000 steps a day?
I mean, that's I think, what I would recommend as a good number. Some other health agencies have put out numbers of, 8,000 or 9,000. So there's some discrepancy, but I think everyone is in agreement that Americans should be doing more activity than they currently are.
Okay. That's certainly a situation where more is better.
Yes.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about some of your research that you've gotten some press for in the past. You were unique in that you were able to look at physical activity in some less technologically advanced societies and compare it to our modern Western society. Let's tell the audience a little bit about those studies and how you started, how you got the idea to do that kind of stuff.
Yeah, well, I had been reading about, physical activity time trends and also levels of physical activity in different populations, ranging from hunter-gatherers to sort of traditional labor-intensive farming societies to modern societies. And I kind of came up with this idea that it would be interesting to study the Old Order Amish.
Hmm.
Because this is a group that refrains from using technology. The elders in each community get together and they establish these rules, or what they call ordnung, which are, they put restrictions on what types of technology you can use.
Hmm.
So very often the Old Order Amish don't, you know, they usually don't drive automobiles, they don't use electricity in the home, and they really still engage in labor-intensive farming with horse-drawn plows and things of that nature.
Wow. So so were you able to look at this group?
Yeah, we were. We went up to southeastern Ontario, and we studied an Old Order Amish group up there. This was through a connection I had. A friend of my parents had actually done her doctoral dissertation on the Amish 50 or 60 years ago, and she has remained in close contact with them the whole time and has lived with them for extended periods of time. So she was able to kind of allow us to gain entree into the community and to get in there and do some pretty interesting research studies.
So when you went in, you know, what did you do? Did you just put the pedometers on these people and watch them, or how'd that work?
Yeah, we actually had to make a couple of trips up there just to sort of meet with them and discuss the idea. And initially, they weren't too wild about the idea of wearing a pedometer because it had a battery and a computer chip in it, and that's something that they're not allowed to use.
That's kind of their standard, huh, for technology?
Yeah.
Okay.
So, you know, we talked about this, and they kind of actually proposed the solution. They said, well, you know, if this were a medical device, like a blood pressure monitor or a blood glucose monitor, then we could use it. So, you know, is it a medical device? And I kind of nodded my head and, you know, said, yeah, I think you could think of it that way.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And we went up there in the spring, I think it was in May, and put the pedometers on about 100 adults in the community. We also had them fill out a questionnaire called the International Physical Activity Questionnaire that is specifically designed to be used in different groups, you know, in different countries, some of whom are technologically advanced and others who are not.
Right, right. And so when you put these pedometers on these folks, what kind of results did you guys get?
Well, it was pretty surprising. The men took about 18,000 steps per day and the women about 14,000.
Wow.
So, you know, roughly three times as much as the average American adult. The other interesting thing we observed was that the levels of obesity in the community were very low.
Mm.
On average, it was about 5% obesity. So that really surprised us, especially in light of the fact that we had shared meals with them and we knew they were eating, you know, pretty high fat, high carbohydrate diets with a lot of calories.
Yeah.
But it just appeared that their physical activity allowed them to burn it off.
Hmm. So just so the audience knows, what's the general level of obesity in the United States as compared to that 5% in that Amish population?
Yeah, well, the levels vary depending on whether you're assessing it by self-reported height and weight or whether you actually measure it.
Yeah.
But based on measured values, I think today it's 35%. Back when we were doing the study, it was about 30% obesity.
Wow, wow. So, and is that, you think, primarily the main difference in the Amish communities that you measured was the activity levels, or was there something else that might explain that difference in obesity level?
I think it was primarily the activity levels. Now, they do have some different dietary habits. You know, they don't engage in snacking.
Okay.
They don't eat fast food. They don't drink soda. So there are some ways in which their diet is healthier than ours, and they do eat lots and lots of fruits and vegetables. I mean, virtually every family has a, you know, about a half-acre vegetable garden where they raise their own produce. But in terms of their three square meals a day, they eat a pretty hearty diet.
Yeah. So, but from what you said, it sounds like it's still a pretty calorically dense meal or meals that they have.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So they eat a lot of calories, but they do a lot of activity, which seems to maybe to offset, and so they have a fairly low prevalence of obesity at this point.
That's correct.
Yeah. So, what about some of the other diseases that we associate with modern society and obesity, things like diabetes, type 2 diabetes. Does the Amish community, do they have that same prevalence that we have in the Western world?
Well, we didn't actually look at those types of lifestyle diseases in this community.
Yeah.
There has been some interesting work published in epidemiology journals. One study in 1981 called Patterns of Mortality in the Old Order Amish found that Amish men actually had a decrease in all-cause mortality, primarily due to lower rates of cancer and cardiovascular disease.
Hmm.
So really, they got those diseases about half as often as other men who lived in the same communities. And this was a study done in Ohio, Indiana, and Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
Interestingly, Amish women didn't enjoy the same protection. So it could be that the more vigorous activity of the men was really helping to hold down their rates of preventable disease.
And that, to some extent, would go along with the literature that's shown that exercise does prevent certain types of cancers, and it certainly reduces the risk from cardiovascular disease and stroke. And so that hypothesis that there are higher activity levels would be protective certainly holds water, doesn't it?
Yes. And I do believe also that their rates of smoking are much lower, so that would contribute to the lower rates of cancer as well.
Yeah. Any indication of why the women might have, you know, might not see the same protection as the men?
Well, potentially they aren't doing as much vigorous activity, although they do seem to do a lot of moderate intensity activity. Another factor is that the Amish tend to have rather large families, so an average of maybe 7 children per family.
Right.
And so that could be perhaps taking a toll on the women's health.
Yeah. You know, you have shared with me in the past some anecdotes from some of these studies, and what the audience needs to know is behind every scientific study there are many things that happen that aren't necessarily reported in the literature. You know, funny stories, things that happen with subjects and so forth. And you in particular told me about one gentleman who had the highest step counts of the day.
Right. The first day that we put the pedometers on them, I met one of the guys coming back from harrowing in the fields, and he was walking behind this team of Belgian horses, you know, probably 6 or 7 horses. And so I asked him, I said, how many steps have you got on your pedometer? And he opened it up and looked down and said, 50,000. And I said, wow. My goodness, that's about 25 miles of walking. And his comment was, yeah, and it weren't no easy walking either.
Yeah, kind of behind a horse or his horse, not mules, right?
Right.
Yeah, behind a horse in a field, that's not easy at all.
Yeah.
Well, and you did mention in the paper that there is, you know, especially on Sundays, they don't do as much activity.
Right. I mean, we could clearly see that Sunday was the day of rest, and they were still getting about 10,000 steps per day on Sunday, but they spend many hours in church service, so a lot of their Sunday is spent sitting down.
So the day of rest, they're actually getting as much activity as we're recommended to get that we don't get.
Correct, yeah. They're getting twice as much as the average American gets on a weekday on Sunday, which is their day of rest.
Yeah, Dave, what can we take from all this? You know, it's incredibly interesting studies and interesting look at the way that populations live that don't use technology. What can we take away from that that's of use to our life?
Well, I think the major take-home message that I came away with is that, you know, the obesity epidemic that we see today in our society is really due to a very great extent to the fact that people aren't burning off the calories that they consume.
Right.
In essence, technology has made our lives too easy. And one of the things that I really admire about the Amish is that they really scrutinize and they're very conscious of technology and the impact that it will have on their lives. So they sit down and they consider each new development, whether it be, you know, the bicycle or the cell phone or, you know, the vacuum cleaner. And they try to say, well, how is this going to improve my life? And do I really need this? And I think we could perhaps be a little bit more selective about what types of technology we use. And we might consider even ways of holding back technology and relying more on human power. For example, for transportation, you know, I'm constantly amazed at the new cars that come out, you know, and the manufacturers will say, well, this one's got 250 horsepower, and so it's much better than this one, which has 180 horsepower. And, you know, you're looking at the Amish guy, and he's like, he's got one horsepower, and it's perfectly adequate to pull him and his family, you know, around town at 15 to 16 miles an hour. And, you know, they're perhaps not the safest vehicles, but it does the job. And it's much more, not only is it better for the environment, but it's probably better for the horses, too. I mean, a fellow that I stayed with up there, one of the Amish families, their horse was 31 years old, and it was something of a legend in that rural area of Ontario. Every year they would have a, you know, a picture in the paper with this horse another year older, because horses generally don't live that long.
Yeah. All that exercise is good.
Yeah.
Well, people forget that we as humans, our bodies were made for activity, and, you know, that goes in direct opposition to what modern society is doing with trying to make everything easy, especially physically easy. And I think we're paying the price for it, right, with so many of the diseases that we're seeing happening in the population.
Yeah, and certainly, you know, Frank Booth has written a lot about this, the fact that our current environment that we find ourselves in really isn't compatible with our genotype. I mean, our genes have been selected over eons for you know, a physically active lifestyle, and it just doesn't work to coop ourselves up in offices and classrooms and not get as much activity as we should be getting.
Yeah. Is there a solution, Dave? If you were made king today, you know, what's the solution? What will work?
Yeah, Tim, that's a question that many reporters have asked me, and, you know, I'd love to say, well, everybody should, you know, raise their own vegetable garden and start raising chickens and, you know, live like the Amish. I don't think that's going to happen anytime soon, but for some people that is the answer.
Yeah.
I think that active transportation is certainly one way that many modern societies, for example, in Europe, have been able to incorporate and maintain the levels of physical activity in their lives. They don't even necessarily look on it as exercise. It's simply the most convenient way to get around in cities in Europe. And it has a real impact on population levels of obesity and preventable disease.
Right. But almost with the way our cities have developed, it's almost impractical unless you live in a big city where things are fairly close to you, huh?
Yeah, it is impractical in many, perhaps most cities in the United States to actively commute.
Yeah. So we just have to continue to remind people that they need to remember to be active, huh?
Yeah. I think in large part for many Americans, the activity is going to come from, you know, purposeful leisure time physical activity, going to the gym, jogging, you know, resistance training, things like that.
Yeah.
To the Amish, it all seems a little bit foolish, you know. They see these people get in their cars and drive to the health club and then spend an hour, you know, lifting weights and walking on the treadmill. And, you know, they're saying, well, why spend all that money? You know, they get that activity just in the course of their daily lives.
So to some extent, this brings us full circle, because isn't that a benefit of people having a pedometer on, is they're more conscious of being active?
Oh, certainly, yeah. I think one magazine called the pedometer a pocket personal trainer.
Oh, okay.
And I think it does raise your consciousness about how active you are and have been over the past day or two. So I certainly think that it can make people realize whether or not they're getting enough physical activity.
Yeah. Yeah, I know when I've worn it, if nothing else, when you get to the end of the day and you go, oh, my gosh, I didn't get as many steps in as I want. And sometimes you'll go back out and, you know, walk up and down the street a couple times to get more steps in. So I've actually seen that work with people because, it, like you said, it is their conscience a little bit as to telling them that they need to be a little bit more active.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So everybody go get a good pedometer. Tell us how it works out. Dave will be around. We'll talk more about it, right, Dave?
Right.
Yeah. we're running short on time here, Dave. As we do every week, we let our guests give us their take-home message. What's the one thing you want people to remember from this podcast?
Well, I think the main thing is just to realize that physical activity is an integral part of our daily lives, and getting adequate levels of physical activity is certainly one of the most important things in terms of maintaining body weight. So whether you get it through, you know, labor-intensive farming or leisure time physical activity, just be sure that you get enough activity in your day.
Yeah. In the end, it will provide benefits.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Dave, thank you so much for being with us here today.
Thank you, Tim.
And what the listeners don't know is it actually took us 3 attempts to get this podcast done because of some technology problems we were having. And so, Dave, thanks for sticking with us and seeing this podcast through to the end.
My pleasure.
And for all of you, thank you for taking the time to download and listen today. It's been a great experience here talking to Dave, and I hope you've enjoyed it as much as we have. I've just been handed the question of the day by our producer, Cheryl. The question of the day is, what was the average number of steps Amish men took on a daily basis during Dr. Bassett's study? Be the first one to email us with a correct answer to that question, and you'll get one of our new nifty podcast T-shirts. The new one has just come out. Be the first one in your block to have it. And just send us that email, that answer, at huffinespodcast@hlkn.tamu.edu. Again, thank you all for listening. And until next week, we hope you have an active and healthy week.
The Sports Medicine Podcast is produced by Kelsey Sachs and Cheryl Myrick and licensed by the Huffines Institute at Texas A&M under a Creative Commons 3.0 license. You can share it as much as you want, and you can talk or blog about it all you want. Just don't change it or charge money for it. This podcast is made possible by support from the Omar Smith family and the Sidney and J.L. Huffines family. Our music was composed, performed, and graciously provided by Dave Zeltner Productions, your source for quality music and music production since 1992. Find them at www.davidzeltner.com. Our opening and closing credits were provided by John Miles Productions at johnmilesproductions.com. If you have questions or comments, please send them to huffinespodcast@hlkn.tamu.edu. From all of us at the Huffines Institute, we hope you have an active and healthy week.